Hello and welcome to the Debt Talk podcast with me, your host, Ripon Ray. You may have guessed it, this time on Debt Talk, we are diving into the true cost of car ownership, especially for low and middle income households when we speak about fines and penalty charges that can be seen as downright punitive for those already in financial difficulty. To help us unpack this complex topic, I'm joined by two brilliant guests. Yes, two brilliant guests. Alison Tews, Chief Engagement and Policy Officer at the British Parking Association, who will guide us through the challenges faced by drivers when dealing with penalty charges and fines. And finally, Sam Nurse, CEO of Money Advice Hub, whose organization advises people on a range of debt issues. Yes, debt issues, including those that arise out of car ownership. So let's start with you, Alison. Alison, from British Parking Association. Before we go into the nitty-gritty of penalty parking and penalty charges, could you tell our listeners what the British Parking Association actually does?
Yeah, sure. And hi, Rip, and thanks for inviting me to have a chat today. So the BPA, which probably is easier to say, has been around for over 50 years. It's very similar to most associations out there. Primarily, it's a membership network that supports those engaged in parking and traffic management. We have over 800 corporate members across the UK, and these represent local authorities, private sector operators, tech developers, enforcement agents, hospitals, airports, universities, and a diverse range of suppliers and advisors to the sector. So we're quite a broad church in parking and traffic management, and there's a lot more to it than you'd ever believe when you're on this side. But we support and also work with many government departments on regulatory developments and change to keep improving standards and enabling the sector to deliver effective parking and traffic management. So that in a nutshell is a run around what the BPA is and does.
Given the increase in car ownership over recent decades, are we also seeing a rise in parking fines and penalty notices? What issues are your members highlighting?
So certainly, if you look at the data, there's a direct and measurable correlation between vehicle growth. I mean, we've now estimated about 40 million vehicles on this very small island. But also the number of places where parking is now being properly managed. So if you go back 10, 15, 20 years, the number of places where you might have encountered parking management, ergo a parking ticket, was far fewer than it is now. So if you put those two things together, then I suppose it stands to reason that you'd expect to see the number of parking tickets being issued raised. And I'll use the term parking ticket generically throughout this because it's hopefully something your listeners understand quite easily. But if you consider for a moment what happens in a car park or a place where no management has ever taken place previously, and then you introduce that management, it results in quite a lot of parking tickets being issued, in short, which really simply highlights that probably a lot of bad parking was taking place there previously and probably for some time, but nobody was detecting it or dealing with it. But conversely, that's precisely the reason why better management would have been implemented in the first place, and probably in response to complaints from either users of that car park, the landowners themselves, or quite often local residents. I mean, that's true. The explosion in residents' parking schemes over the years have come about primarily because the residents complain to the council because they can't find anywhere to park, and ergo enforcement goes in place. But it's a virtuous circle where then more parking tickets are being issued. In more recent times, the sector's seen quite significant growth in what we call persistent offending. So in other words, an increase in a number of tickets issued, but to the same person or vehicle. There are, believe it or not, people who don't really care about the fine. I know that's not necessarily the people we're focused on today, but there is an increase in people who are quite happy to pay the fine because it means they can pretty much park anywhere. So a number of those increasing numbers of tickets are being issued to the same people, same vehicles. And one or two of them actually proudly recommend it to others on social media, so we see. There are also those who have learned how to evade the system entirely to avoid paying. We can talk about that a bit more if you're interested. And the probably more of what we're going to talk about today is there's probably quite a few people who are not necessarily trying to evade the system, but they don't know how to deal with the system. Therefore, they sort of get a parking ticket and ignore it in the hope it will go away. But relatively speaking, the sector hasn't become more active or found ever increasing new ways to issue more tickets. I think it's important for people to understand you can't just spuriously issue a ticket without good grounds and evidence, and that applies on public or private land. So I suppose the simple answer is for a combination of reasons. Yes, there's been a growth in the number of parking contraventions occurring out there and being detected over time. So that's a sort of run round. But yes, the data shows an increase over the last few years.
I mean, you talked about tickets, so we'll talk about tickets and going deeper into it. To explain the different types of parking tickets and how they relate to car ownership and the usage.
So I'll start with the sort of broad categories. We have local authorities who issue penalty charge notices for parking contraventions is the term. And this will be either on the public highway or in any local authority-owned car park. So PCNs, as they're abbreviated to, are civilly issued penalties. They follow a regulated process. The relevant regulations sit within the Traffic Management Act, and they govern how they're both issued and recovered. The system is civil, so a PCN, whilst being issued for failure to follow parking regulations or law, is not a criminal offence. Then you've got the police can issue fixed penalty notices for a number of parking and moving traffic contraventions. FPNs do sit within the criminal system, could ultimately lead to prosecution. I mean, without frightening anybody, I don't think for an average parking FPN you're going to be prosecuted, but it follows a different route of recovery. On private land, operators who are employed by the relevant landowner issue what are known as parking charges. Quite different in that on private land, the basis sits within contract law. So the premise is that when you enter a private car park and are deemed to have accepted the terms and conditions for parking there, and they will be shown on signs around the site, e.g., my term and condition is you stay for an hour or you pay to park or don't park here. But once you get out of your car and walk away, the idea is that a contract has been formed between you and the operator forward slash landowner. And if you don't follow those terms, you could be issued with a parking charge. Operators on private land have to be a member of an accredited trade association, so that's us or another body called the IPC or International Parking Community, and they must follow a code of practice to retain that membership. That status is actually what allows them to obtain vehicle keeper details from the DVLA for the purposes of issuing and recovering parking charges. So those are the three main ones. So you've got penalty charge notices, fixed penalty notices, and parking charges.
Let's start with the most serious one, given by the police. What's the legal process and cost involved around it?
Okay, so like you say, it's the most serious, but probably the rarest one you will come across. Police only get involved in a relatively small number of parking contraventions these days, and the majority of on street, and we're talking about on the highway here, so the police aren't going to be issuing in car parks. Well, certainly not for parking contraventions. They might have issue with other criminal related behaviour in car parks. So the majority of on-street enforcement has really been devolved to local authorities over the last 20 plus years. The police will still issue fixed penalty notices, particularly for dangerous parking or obstruction of the highway. This does include pavements, and it's worth noting that in a lot of parts of the UK, London and Scotland being the exceptions, local authorities can't at the moment enforce pavement parking. Parking on pedestrian crossing zigzag markings is one that is still under the police, and some moving traffic offences, which I know strays out of parking, but sort of all sits in the same camp. So FPN charges vary from around £50 up to £300, and that fine is reduced by 50% if paid within 14 days. In really serious incident, because it is in the criminal world, it could include points on your license, and it's an important distinction that a civilly issued penalty charge notice would not, you couldn't endorse somebody's license no matter how many PCNs they actually received. So that is kind of how the FPN system works.
So, in terms of moving towards penal charge notices and other civil, where do they fit in and how the costs are calculated?
Okay, so penalty charge notices, the amount that can be charged is governed by statute. So you can't just set a charge for a penalty charge notice. That is all written into the relevant regulations. The overarching law is the Traffic Management Act for England and Wales. Scotland and Northern Ireland have different laws, but the process is broadly similar, I think, for understanding of the average person. So local authorities can only charge the amount prescribed in law for a penalty charge notice. So currently, that is up to £160 in London. Not in all instances, but I'm going for the maximum it could be. So up to 160 in London, up to 70 in England, outside of London and Wales, up to £100 in Scotland and £90 in Northern Ireland. So as you can see, there's a bit of a mixture there. PCN charges are reduced by 50% if they're paid in 14 days. We've just done the FPNs. On private land, the current cap on parking charges, so the maximum that could be charged for a parking charge, is set in a joint sector code of practice, and that is at £100. And it's important to say that a cap is a maximum charge. So in many instances, if you go wherever really bored ripping and wanted to go around lots of private car parks, you'll find somewhere they've set the charge lower than that, but they can't go over 100. Private land parking charges are reduced by 40% if paid within 14 days in the current code.
No doubt there could easily be some tension, and when there are conflict and tension, and there may be an urge to appeal. What's the process for appeal when you believe that the fine is given to you wrongly?
Yeah, so there are appeals systems. I think in all of the enforcement regimes we've discussed, but I'll just focus on the local authority and private side. So in both of those, there's the first stage. So I would always say to people, if you've received a parking ticket, let's call it generic term, and you believe there has been a mistake, or there's something you want to explain about the circumstances in which it was issued, you have the opportunity to appeal to the person who issued it. So whether that's the local authority or the operator. Now, hopefully, in most cases, you might be able to get it resolved, but if your appeal was rejected, in both sectors, there are second stage appeal services that motorists can use, and there's no charge to the motorists for this if they're unable to resolve that matter with whoever issued it. I say about first stage appeal, to access that second stage, you must appeal first to the operator or the authorities. You can't just skip to the second stage. If they do reject your appeal to them, they will then tell you how to request and lodge that second stage appeal. So you should, if when you receive a letter saying we've looked at this and we're not accepting your appeal, they should give you clear instruction on how you access the relevant appeal service from there. Now, again, a bit like with charges, there are a number of appeal services. So for local authorities, it will depend on where the penalty was issued. So there are appeal services in local government for London specifically, England outside of London and Wales. Scotland has its own, and so does Northern Ireland. But as I say, the important thing is to look at correspondence you receive, and it will tell you which of those you need to actually appeal to. For private land, there are two appeal services, and which you use depends on which accredited trade association the operator who issued your ticket belongs to. So the two services that exist are parking on private land appeals, or poplar as we call it. That is one that is operated via an arm's length contract by the BPA. And then there's the independent appeal service, which is operated by the IPC. I think in reality, the appeals work in broadly the same way in practice, but obviously the frameworks and the regulations are different. But as I say, you will be informed how to appeal. Generally, you're given a code or a reference and instructions, and you should follow that. And then your appeal will be heard by somebody independent of the person who issued it.
In terms of, let's say, specific locations?
From what we know, that generally speaking, the biggest complaints that come through are really in situations involving things like overstays or underpayments, where motorists probably feel they had some justification from their perspective of being a bit late back to their car. And we've also seen issues arise with developments in technology where people have struggled to make payments. Obviously now it's, you know, it's not put your money in a meter all the time. It's using apps or it's various other technology, which can be beneficial to the motorist, but equally it's a new thing to navigate. So sometimes lack of familiarity with the tech, or in some cases where it's reported was not working, that will generate a lot of complaints if then tickets have been issued. And I think it's surmising really where motorists considered they tried to do the right thing, found it difficult or impossible, or from their perspective, what happened was a minor issue. It inevitably attracts more complaints and scrutiny than somebody who's blatantly, you know, sort of parked on a school zigzag or somewhere they knew they shouldn't be and have caused quite a lot of issues. I suppose maybe less room to complain at that point. But this is again where appeals should pick up instances where something has fundamentally gone wrong. So for example, you know, a ticket machine could have been proven to have broken down. But they can also consider mitigation. Now it's important to say that mitigation, because it can be quite broad and open, is not necessarily a ground for appeal in and of itself, but it will be taken into consideration. Appealing doesn't mean, I think it's important to say, it doesn't mean every ticket will be cancelled, but it's always worth having that conversation if you feel you have things to explain around the issues and the circumstances you encountered when that ticket was issued. On the flip side, you know, our sector data does show there's a small but very problematic number of motorists who can be a bit economical with the truth when it comes to appeals, which is why appeals decisions have to be based upon specific grounds and supported by evidence. So it's not there to be exploited, but it's there to protect people in the way it needs to as well.
Sometimes a recovery of tickets do get escalated. So at what point enforcement agents, or formerly known as bailiff, intervene to resolve this issue or take the recovery process further?
Yeah, well, as you say, I mean, if we talk about local authority PCNs, certainly if we're talking about what we're more commonly known as bailiffs, because that doesn't apply in the private sector. So when a PCN is issued by a local authority, there are written again into regulations time periods that have to be adhered to in that process. So as a general rule, there's a period of 28 days allowed, and it will be specified in the penalty charge notice itself, and that's the time frame within which it should be paid. Now, obviously, there's some caveats there because within that time, a motorist may have chosen to make representations, so that's what the term we use for first line appeals, and also then gone to appeal to an adjudication. Obviously, depending on what happens next, those time frames can be frozen and restarted. So you've either got a situation where a PCN's been issued and the motorist just ignores it and it hits the 28-day period, no contact, no nothing, or quite a lot could have happened in that period of time. And I suppose the important thing is if you do get into that cycle of appealing, any notices you get, whether that's from first or second stage appeals that are rejecting your appeal, will clearly outline the next steps and the date by which payment needs to be made. So say you appeal and you exhaust your line of appeal, and you're not successful, then you will receive further correspondence that will say, okay, your appeal has not been successful. Please settle this amount by this date. So obviously any for whatever reason, if that remains unpaid, then there will be a next stage. So it is an escalating process, I suppose, like a lot of enforcement processes, it doesn't just stop. So if it remains unpaid after whatever relevant date, so it's either the original 28 days or whenever it was supposed to be paid, an authority can issue what's known as a charge certificate. So issuing a charge certificate will increase the amount owed from the original penalty charge. So probably worth explaining on escalating charges. If you took a penalty charge of £70, if you paid it within 14 days, so if you received it and said, okay, I've got no grounds of appeal, you have 14 days within which it could be £35, and you pay it, it's settled, it's done. If you choose to take it to second stage appeal, you do so in the knowledge that if you lose that appeal, the full charge of £70 will apply. And that was really put in as a safeguard against spurious appeals into the regulations, because otherwise everybody would feel tempted to do it, whether they felt they had grounds or not. So if you go beyond the 14 days or you have an unsuccessful appeal, then the full £70 will apply. If it goes on to another stage, it will then increase, and it can continue to increase as it goes into the debt recovery process. So I suppose the byline here is the sooner you can come to a conclusion on it, it shouldn't then escalate into some of the debts we hear about related to parking tickets. Now, when you receive a charge certificate, if you did, you would have 14 days to settle that at the amount. And there are also some other allowances in there that if for some reason you haven't had right to appeal, so you need to read carefully what it says, you know, so there are some caveats. But generally speaking, you would have 14 days from the issue of a charge certificate to pay, and then that would end the process. Should you not, or you shouldn't, or you don't enter into a conversation, you know, say you've not been able to have an appeal, you've not received information previously, if you do none of that and just leave it, after those 14 days, the local authority can apply for what is essentially a court order, to recover what is owed at that point. And it's very common, it doesn't have to. Authorities could do this themselves, but it's very common then for such an order to be given to enforcement agents or bailiffs to start the recovery process. You asked about how they're regulated or managed. So they enforcement agents are regulated under the Tribunals, Courts and Enforcement Act. And there are very strict rules governing their processes and behaviour down to individual agents who have to be certificated. More recently, there's been the introduction of the Enforcement Conduct Board, to provide greater oversight in terms of enforcement agent firms and their processes. And contrary to popular belief, the first step an EA must take is a period of engagement with the debtor. So the thought they're going to just show up on your doorstep is not the way the process works. So that first engagement process is focused primarily upon debt resolution. So it can involve tracing debtors where perhaps the address registered against the vehicle originally was incorrect. Assessing vulnerabilities, breathing space regulations will come in here. They have to pay due heed to that and allow for it if the person is eligible under breathing space. And that's part of that assessment and ability to pay. And as far as possible, they'll be attempting to put in place workable payment plans. Taking control of goods, as it's known, so that's where they do come to your house, is a last step if all else fails. So I would just say if you find yourself in a place where enforcement agents are in touch, again, it's that engagement in that process and try and resolve it as early as possible, as opposed to thinking it will just sort of go away if I ignore it. So the costs are do escalate during the recovery process. The longer it goes on, the more you may end up owing. So, as I say, early engagement, probably further back than that, is really a good idea.
And finally, Alison, you've spoken, offline about the importance of prevention rather than crisis management escalate. What practical steps can people take to avoid getting tickets in the first place?
Okay, this sounds a very simple one, but when you park your car, really take note of where you've parked it. And I don't mean to sound flippant, but lines and signs are there for a reason and they mean something. And if you aren't sure, I think probably we could all say we could do with reading the highway code again, or local authority websites actually do publish a lot of useful info on parking regs, because there's mixed stories out there about what a double yellow line means, never mind anything else. And I know it can appear complicated, but if you're not sure, I would say don't park there. Read signs in private car parks, particularly if it's the first time you've ever gone there. If a sign says stay for an hour or it says pay, try to do that. And as I say, really, if you're not sure you should park somewhere, it's maybe better to go and find somewhere else you are sure about. And I suppose, as we've said, if life happens, something goes wrong, which is beyond your control, or you think they've made a mistake, appeal it. It is a chance to have a conversation with the person who issued the ticket. I can assure you, because I know them, that there are people behind this process, and our sector does aim to be as fair and reasonable as possible, whatever the perception of it might be. And I suppose I just sort of end by saying it's important to understand a ticket is always issued to a vehicle and not a person. So it's not a personal thing. And when the person issuing it cannot know anything about you, they just go on the evidence available to them at the time they do it. So if you've got stuff to share with them, if you've got evidence and information that they couldn't have known about, share it. And I'd say finally, whatever you do, if you get a ticket, don't sort of bury it and ignore all of the letters that follow. The earlier in the process you engage, even if that means perhaps the best option is to pay it on this occasion at the lower amount, the far less likely you'll be ending up in any kind of significant debt from a parking ticket. That would be my advice.
Lovely. Thank you, Alison. Thank you very much. Now let's bring Sam Nurse, CEO of Money Advice Hub, into this precise conversation. Sam, your debt advisors are often on the front line supporting people facing no doubt financial hardship. That includes unopened letters, spiraling debts, and of course, the hidden cost of owning a car. What are the typical challenges that your advisors see when someone in debt also owns or finances a car?
Hi Ripon, thank you for inviting me back on the podcast. I'm delighted to join you today, and Alison. Where do I start? There are multiple issues, so I'm going to start with the parking fines that Alison has been talking about, so that we have a smooth flow. I would probably respectfully disagree with some of the comments that Alison said, but I do understand her perspective. In that I don't feel that people that we come across are evading tickets. I think for many, a parking penalty is an inconvenience. It's a tipping point. When every pound is already stretched between food, fuel, and heating, even a small fine can feel like a financial cliff edge. So when the cost of a parking ticket rivals a week's groceries, avoiding it isn't evasion, it's survival. So I don't think people are inherently dodging fines and trying to get out of them for any undue means. It's because they're trying to survive. They can't afford the ticket. The high parking costs in local council areas, they've increased considerably recently, means that people are going to take more riskier parking decisions to go and get their basic domestic needs. And if we don't look at this situation practically, it's going to damage the local economy because people will start not shopping in town. I know from personal experience, I don't shop in my local town because there's nowhere to park. And often I will go into our paid car park and there's no spaces left. So what are we to do? That is going to hit economies. So there is a government consultation that's open at the moment. I'm surprised that Alison didn't mention it because it's open right now and it's on the private parking code of practice. And I would urge anyone that's been affected by parking penalties and who feels that they want to protect their local community shops to respond to that consultation because there's some very key issues in it that need to be addressed when it's all looked at. So that the closing date for that is the 5th of September 2025. And in particular, the debt collection fee of £70 is up for debate. It is very disproportionate when compared to other debt collection recovery procedures and companies. So, for example, an energy company will likely use a £20 fine. So, this disproportionate £70 seems to be out of kilter with the rest of the economy for recovery. So, I think that people do need to put their thoughts forward. Especially people that have been affected by parking fines. And also local retailers. It's damaging your business if people are avoiding shopping in their local town. So, sorry, Alison, I've got that out of the way because we see a lot of people with repeated fines. So, another thing that I would say is that when people come to us with fines that they owe, there's often multiple fines. So this is a problem where it is a tipping point and they need a debt solution because they cannot afford to pay them off. They're not challenging them and appealing them because of any getting out of it. They actually can't afford them. So I'm going to step right on to the motoring price index to hone in on that, the cost of living at the moment and how hard it is for people to run cars. If you look at the figures over the last 10 years, tax and insurance of a vehicle has increased by 220.5%. That is an astonishing figure. Compared to an increase in wages of 48.76%. And the cost of living of 56.42. So you can see there's a massive void there in how people's incomes are increasing versus how much it's costing to run a car. That's magnified in areas where there is a poverty premium on car insurance and also ULEZ zones, which was expanded not so long back. So I worked out a basic maths calculation for this, and somebody in an area with low mileage and ULEZ. It's actually costing them £1.09 per mile to get about the city. And if you compare that to the HMRC mileage rates for what you can claim if you're self-employed or if you're claiming back expenses from your employer, it's 45p a mile for the first 10,000 and 25p over 10,000. Now, those rates haven't been changed for over a decade. I find that astonishing. So, we've got a proportion of people here being really hit hard, likely to be shopping in their local town centre, hit with increased car parking charges, increased running costs. If you go out into the rural areas, there's less parking, there's more likelihood of getting into the private parking fines that you get. In addition to that, the other thing that we see is people with PCP car finance agreements and hire purchase. Now, one of the downsides of people with those agreements is they've probably took them out in the first place because they don't have the capital to buy a car outright. They can't reach out to high street lending with lower loan rates because they've got bad credit. So they end up with quite a high value car on hire purchase, and the costs of servicing just that hire purchase are very high. So they've got on costs as well because of their situation with their credit rating. There are some murmurs in the enforcement industry and the parking industry about the value of people's cars and how they can afford to run those agreements. And the answer is they probably can't, but it's their only option if it's their essential vehicle to get to work. And when we look at people's budgets and what they're prioritizing their payments on, some clients will have to prioritize their hire purchase because they have signed up to the engine immobilizer system, where if you don't pay your HP, you can't start your car in your driveway. So there are lots of different factors to look at in all of this. Generally speaking, if you need to have a car to get your children to school, if you need to have a car to get your to get yourself to work, then this is a big issue for you. I don't like to say too much about personal experiences, but another thing that I would say about parking charges is that I've heard from clients that they go into a hospital car park because they've got an appointment. There's no spaces in the hospital car park. They have no choice but to park illegally. Then they try to get nearer to the hospital, and there are issues with not understanding signage. So there are some issues in the industry with parking machines not working. You can put your part of your registration plate in and it will go to the payment section. I think they're trying to resolve those issues at the moment, but there are definite points where you can appeal parking tickets. If we look at the costs of buying an electric vehicle, so everybody's encouraged to be greener, and if we look at all the ULEZ charges, and even parking charges are factoring in the effect on the atmosphere, the emissions, the parking increases, the cost of an electric vehicle is expensive. If you need to charge it at home, there's extra costs for installing the port to charge it up. So there's a lot of things happening in the economy right now that make it very, very difficult for drivers, people that need to have cars. And I don't think we can be judgmental to people who are just trying to survive and juggling different expenses.
Sam, you mentioned about consumer credit cars such as HP, a hire purchase. I mean, what options do your clients have when they find themselves in difficulties with that?
There's actually quite a lot of options that they can do. And the first port of call is usually to contact the HP provider. So it depends on the provider. It depends on the terms of the agreement and how much far through you are. But if you have hire purchase that you can't afford, the best thing to do is contact the provider, tell them that you're in immediate financial struggles. The reasons why can sometimes help because it gives mitigation, and ask them if you can have either a repayment holiday, lower the payment for a certain amount of time, or at least ask them what your options are. So there are some things that you can do if you really desperately need the car. It's an option to lower the payment. And in my experience, a lot of hire purchase companies will have some options to help someone short term, but longer term, it may need to be looking at other options.
If someone chooses to give up the car, is that always a simple solution, or are there risks?
Okay, well, there's two choices with giving up the car. One is voluntary termination, and the other is voluntary surrender. Those are two different types of things. We often, if you Google search giving up your car, it will often come up with the option of voluntary termination, which involves you having to have paid 50% of the agreement, including interest and charges. And it doesn't tell you about voluntary surrender. So I think that's something that I would like to highlight, is that you do have both options. So where it tells you that you can't voluntarily terminate, it doesn't mean you can't voluntarily surrender. The difference between the two is that if you voluntarily surrender, therefore you haven't paid 50%, then your car will be taken back and auctioned, and you could be left with the deficit of what they've got for the car and what is left on the agreement. But with voluntary termination, you can hand the car back and technically not owe any more money if you've paid 50%. But the caveat with that is that you can't have had any excess wear or tear. And in particular, with PCP agreements, if you've exceeded the mileage quota that they've put in the agreement, that can also mean that you owe more money at the end of the agreement. With PCP, the 50% includes the balloon payment at the end, 50% of that. Voluntary termination, the 50% mark, it's important to say that if you haven't reached the 50% mark of the agreement, you can actually make it up to the 50%. So I have advised a client before where they were like £96 off of the 50%. An advisor would say, if you can make that £96, it counts to giving the car back. The biggest downside of giving the car back, of course, is that you don't have a car. So what are you going to do? And in some people's areas, public transport isn't an easy solution. It certainly isn't where I live. And also, if we have a look at the motor price index, there is a comparison of rail and bus and coach costs, and they've also exceeded the cost of living. So, the alternative to running a car isn't great for some people. It's not a panacea for saving costs.
So then, how does car ownership affect formal debt solutions like debt relief order or bankruptcy?
Well, the first thing to consider is that if you're going to do a formal debt solution, you can keep a car, okay, in a lot of situations, but you have to be able to demonstrate that it is essential for your needs. So if you're just pottering around in a car and keeping it just when you could walk up the road and go to the shops, then you're unlikely to qualify for keeping it. But if it's essential, if you've got children to get to school, if you have a health disability, or if you need it to get to work, you're likely to be able to confirm that you need the car. If you are disabled and you have the qualifying benefit, disability benefits, and a car that is adapted, then those are excluded from the formal debt solutions. That's important to note. And also, in different debt solutions, cars are viewed differently. So, if you do a debt relief order, you should be able to keep a car that is valued at under 4,000 or under. That's a figure that has not so long back been quite a lot increased, which shows the insolvency services recognition that the cost of a car goes up and that people need to have cars that are essential to them. So you can keep that. In bankruptcy, it's a lesser value, £1,500, and they are very tight on looking at the essential needs of the car. So if they feel that someone could walk or cycle to work, they are more likely to look at the possibility of selling that car as an asset towards the bankruptcy. But it is possible to keep the car. Where you have car on finance, in a bankruptcy, it's not usually possible to keep the car on finance. So it's likely that that would erode somebody's income and expenditure to the point where it diminishes what they've got spare to put towards their bankruptcy. However, there are some exceptions to that, and it can be appealed and argued. You can always put your circumstances forward to the official receiver. It's always a good idea to barter. In debt relief order, you can keep a car on hire purchase as long as you don't have any arrears outstanding. Otherwise, they have to be scheduled as a debt, and it's likely that the car will be repossessed if you do that. So, if you can demonstrate that the cost of running that car and paying for the HP is better than actually going to public transport, if there isn't a great alternative, then you can keep a car on hire purchase. That is sometimes not known and sometimes flouted when people are trying to sell IVAs, because you can keep a car in an IVA on hire purchase. But it's important to note that in a debt relief order, it's possible to keep the car as well. With all the things I'm saying, obviously, you need to have an expert debt advisor to run through all the pros and cons and look at your individual circumstances. But keeping a car is a possibility when you do the formal debt solutions.
I mean, we've painted a hopeful picture, no doubt, of the options available. But in practice, Sam, how cooperative are local authorities and central government bodies when it comes to fines and penalty notices?
I would say that in I think this kind of goes into what Alison was saying about people evading. And I think that we, as debt advisors and people that campaign against parking charge fines, have created a society where we encourage appealing. And I don't think that should be taken personally by the car parking industry. I think it should be accepted as a way of human life that if we can't afford something, it is sensible to appeal. But whenever I give that advice to my clients and in my organization, basically we have to caveat it with you might not win the appeal. Nothing ventured, nothing gained is the way that we look at it in debt advice. So if you look at somebody's appeals process, and the local authorities have them very transparently on their websites, you can almost see that an appeal is going to be refused before you lodge it sometimes. But if somebody in that department understands that mitigating circumstance, then it may be that they do actually uphold the appeal. And we shouldn't just focus on parking fines either. We also get debt clients that have got a series of traffic contraventions. And this can happen because there's a slight delay when the notice gets sent through the post. It can be that you can have a series, say 10 or 12, going down the same road that you didn't realize that there was a parking restriction on. So some people come to us and they've got the same fine because they haven't realized they haven't seen a sign, or they have misunderstood the rules. I think Alison is right in that we should all refresh on the highway code. It's really important to know what we are supposed to be doing legally driving, especially for people that are not native to the country and not native to the area. I think you need to be thinking about planning your travels well in advance with parking tickets. Give yourself as far as possible as much time to look for parking. Factor that in. Know that there are difficulties getting into car parks and finding cheap car park areas. And also look out, use the apps and look for free parking. That's always a good idea.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you very much. Let's now return to our guest for their final top tips, especially for listeners struggling with the rising cost of owning a car. So let me start with you, Alison. What top tips would you like to give to the listeners?
And coming back to sell. It is an important consultation. I think some of the points made about comparing parking debt to electricity underpayment charges or late payment charges, we're probably going to have different views on that. And I think except that, you know, you see it from one side, we see it from the side of the parking sector has got a job to do, and if it doesn't do it well enough, then actually the fallout from that is just as much of a societal problem for people. You've mentioned people not being able to find places to park, and sometimes that's because people are parking in places they shouldn't and denying other people opportunity to park. And I think an important thing is certainly on the private land side of it, that an operator only operates in a car park because the landowner has asked them to do it. So retailers are concerned about the turnover of space in their car parks. And that's primarily why they put management in place. But notwithstanding, people that are in debt should be able to not feel the burden of a parking fine on top of everything else. I go back to, and I think we've both said it, Sam, and I was trying to get the point, the earlier in the process you can engage, the better. We do see a lot of people that end up at debt recovery stage who haven't done that early engagement. And obviously by the time they get there, it feels 10 times more difficult to deal with, and that's probably why they've come to see people like yourselves. So there shouldn't be, I mean, going right back to the beginning, you can avoid in 99% of cases getting a parking ticket if you are aware of your surroundings, if you plan your journey. And that would be my absolute top tip is, and our sector data shows that from very good data of cars going in and out of car parks every day of the week, that 99.7 of them do it without incurring a parking ticket. Doesn't make it any better for the 0.3% that do. I appreciate that. But to put some perspective on it, you know, it is quite a small number, and it's quite a small number that then end up at debt recovery. The sector is always looking at what it can do to do things better. It doesn't get the best reputation, but I honestly see it from the perspective of knowing the companies involved, seeing the processes they go through, and that they're there to do a job. I think that's the important thing to remember, that if parking goes unmanaged and there isn't a deterrent to stop people from just parking where they want, they will do it. And we see that side of it. And I know we're talking about debt here and what seems like disproportionate debt for parking somewhere too long for 5 minutes. But it is quite a difficult thing to manage. So I'd say for people listening is, first thing, avoidance is always best. But really, you know, do try engaging the moment that thing lands on your car or your doorstep. The best thing you can do is to reach out. And if it is an affordability issue, because interestingly, when we look at the reasons for appeal that come through, and we do look at a lot of data, it's quite rare that people appeal just on the basis they can't afford to pay it. From this end, obviously, by the time it reaches debt advice, that is probably the primary reason. So I would say early engagement, and I think that's what Sam said, don't ignore the letters. There is a process there that just does run through. It's like so many other enforcement regimes, whether it's parking or otherwise. So yeah, try and avoid it in the first place and try and have that conversation. And Sam, the sector's always listening, so I'm happy to have a chat after this podcast.
And finally, Sam, what top tips would you give to Debt Talk listeners?
Thank you, Alison, for the invitation. I would love to have a chat with you. And I do understand that we have different views and perspectives. So I'm going to just note one point of what Alison has said. In terms of debt advice and expert advisors that can give you your rights and responsibilities, It's definitely a plus to not use demonizing language that makes people feel ashamed or guilty about the debts that they have. And the problem with the parking fines is that people do feel that they are demonized, that they've done something wrong. And what we try to do in our industry is encourage people to feel comfortable coming to us so that they can get the proper advice they need. That's a really important psychological aspect of our job, is to make sure people feel comfortable talking to us about what they've done and what debts they have. So I echo those views to all the listeners out there that have debts and problems. Nobody is ever going to judge you in debt advice. Come to us and we will give you all of your rights and responsibilities for these debts. Right, several points, top tips on parking fines in particular. I would say make sure you plan your parking before your trip. Use apps. There's loads of great apps. I do it whenever I go into a city now. Look for free parking and just make sure you plan enough time. It's not always possible, but try and put that extra 30 minutes in getting the right parking. Consider walking, consider car share if it's viable. Before you purchase a car, calculate the true costs. There are some calculators out there on the internet. Do some Google searches that will tell you what the cost of running your actual car is. So don't just look at what you can buy on hire purchase. Get the model of the car, see what consumption it uses, and work out how much your car costs are going to be. If you feel that your car, running your essential car, is causing financial distress, always come to the debt advice service. You do not have to have a debt solution at the end of it. No one's going to pressure you into doing that. We would just give you all your options. It's always best to engage, as Alison said. Don't ignore parking tickets or fines or traffic contraventions. Make sure that you deal with them straight away. It's worth putting mitigating circumstances forward. And even if you get a refusal, don't let that deter you. Try again if you are in that situation. It can be very defeating. It's a bit like going for a job over and over again and being refused and rejected. Rejection is very bad, but if you try again, it can sometimes work out for you. I think respond to the consultation. As I said, I think it's important that all views are listened to and absorbed in these consultation processes. And a top tip for me with some parking areas where you get fines, it is possible to have a discussion with the proprietor. So if the proprietor accepts your mitigation, sometimes they can call off the parking fine. It is possible to try and go to the source. So if you're in a situation where you've parked, overstayed in a supermarket, and it was because the checkout till didn't work, then you may have some backward sort of mitigation there in that respect. But generally speaking, it is expensive to run a car, and you need to think carefully about whether it is essential to you. Can you do without it? Or if you do need to do it, you need to factor it into your budget and get debt advice if it's getting too much for you.
I'm truly, truly grateful to Alison Tews from British Parking Association and Sam Nurse from Money Advice Hub for sharing their insights and knowledge on Debt Talk. Without you, Debt Talk wouldn't have earned the brilliant feedback and ratings that it received on Spotify. On the next episode of Debt Talk Podcast, we'll be turning our attention to healthcare and your money, another issue where financial insecurity is hitting vulnerable communities hard. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm your host, Ripon Ray. Take care and goodbye.